Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Clearly, that was not a long enough break.
That's okay. You just dove into the pizza a little bit late.
Well, since I never get to have any, because lunch is always over with by the time the show comes on the air.
You ate your dessert first.
I did eat the dessert first. Second. Well, I had to make sure that I jumped in because Miss Robin made the cranberry bread for the boys today, and naturally, woof, gone. Hey, Eric. How the hell are you?
Hey,
he's
Murphy.
Got his mouth full of food here.
I'm having the famous Robin cranberry bread.
Yeah, it's still good, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
No, thought so. Well, Merry Holidays, or Happy Christmas, or Hanukkah, or whatever it is, Festivus. I'm trying to make sure that I got my bearing straight here. All right, got a game to play this Sunday. I get the overall impression, not too many people worried about it at this stage of the game.
I was more worried last week.
Well,
and I think my fears.
Did you pick the Patriots to win last week?
I did, but I was worried all week that something along the lines of Cleveland 2010 or Miami 2004 could unfold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it almost did.
It almost did, and I tended to agree, even though I didn't get the chance to be on the air last week, but I tended to agree. I thought it would be a tougher game than probably advertised or at least thought of with Houston. It turned out to be that way. I'm getting the impression that that's not the case, at least overall, with the feeling going into Cleveland this week. And Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, she's going to join us a little bit later on in the program, but I believe she's still joining us. Is that right, Kevin?
Yep, around 2:30.
Thank you. All right, good. So I just wanted to make sure. So, got to be accurate with these things. She covers them on, like I said, on a daily basis. And frankly, right now, we don't even know who Cleveland's going to have at quarterback.
And I was also very impressed, not to interrupt you, but I went onto her Twitter.
Yes.
Give her a follow and just kind of get a scouting report.
Right.
She's got like 55,000 followers.
It's big. I that's why I retweeted her today, too.
It's impressive.
That's why I need all the help I can get. I'm nearing 2,000. I'm getting there. I'm hoping that maybe, you know, her Twitter followers can, you know, help put me over the limit if they want to follow, you know, somebody that, you know, has something to do with the Patriots. Although I don't know that.
Can we digress for a moment? A little early in the show?
Don't we always?
It's been a couple of weeks since.
Okay, go right ahead.
I love the names that newspapers give themselves.
The Cleveland Plain Dealer?
Plain Dealer.
That's been,
you know,
that's been, they've been the Plain Dealer for eons. I think that's just, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when they originally formed the paper, like, they said, what are we going to call ourselves? We're the Cleveland.
We're the Plain Dealer.
Yeah.
You mean as opposed to the Fancy Dealer?
Like the Courier or like the Journal. You know, Providence has the Journal.
It used to be the Journal Bulletin.
Journal Bulletin.
Because it was two separate papers.
The Herald. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of places have a Herald. Miami Herald, Boston Herald.
Dallas Times Herald.
Sun Sentinel.
The Times-Picayune.
Right.
That's a good one, too.
Times-Picayune. Sun Sentinel.
The Union Tribune.
Yeah.
San
like,
Diego.
Where do these names come from?
Mm-hmm.
Where do they come from? Courier, I can kind of understand because...
Go yourself, San Diego.
Thank you.
Yeah. Courier is like, you know, you're running around delivering the news.
The Louisville Courier Journal. That one actually makes sense, a Courier Journal, right? Journal that's carried by courier to you.
Courier your journal.
Your what?
You courier your journal.
I courier your journal. That's right. Most places do. I think that is just a tribute to when the papers were founded, probably back in the 19th century. Most of them, and that's how they were distributed a lot of times.
But
How about the one I used to work for years ago when I was in high school? Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Star-Telegram.
It was
I can see the star for Texas, right?
And the telegram because it's delivered on a daily basis, so to speak, kind of thing, I suppose.
Okay, kind of get that.
And then, of course, you have two papers in Dallas for a long time. You had, not anymore.
Morning News.
And the Times-Herald, which merged. You used to have two papers in Fort Worth. You had the Star-Telegram and the Press, the Fort Worth Press, which to me made the most sense of all.
That absolutely makes sense, yeah. But some of these names are just so creative. Like, I wonder who came up with them, what they have to do with anything.
It's a process of merging and a process of going back to paper's roots back in the 19th century. That's the only thing I can come up with, being honest with you. My guess is there might have been two papers at one time. I don't know enough about Cleveland's newspaper history to know that. I don't even know if Mary Kay Cabot would know that. If you want to ask her, we can ask her. But
maybe we'll save it.
But at the same time, it's probably a little bit of both, a little bit of history and a little bit of merging from two separate entities at one time in the paper's history. That's what I would guess.
They just seem like names that have nothing to do with journalism.
Right.
For the most part.
A lot of times that is the case.
You know?
Yeah. Of course, it's better than calling it the Cleveland crap. I mean, you could probably call it that, depending upon if you're a fan or not. But you kind of get me off, though, on a little bit why I am a little of what I was thinking today, because, frankly, I'm thinking about the Cleveland Browns overall, and I'm thinking, what do we really know about Cleveland? And I know that, Bill Belichick used to coach there. We don't really get a chance to see Cleveland all that much based on where they finish in their divisional standings.
Right.
So it usually has to do with the divisional rotation when we, get a chance to see Cleveland.
When we have to play a division.
Division team, right. So I'm thinking, all right, so what does Cleveland remind me of? And frankly, other than the Browns, which that's the first thing I think of when I think of the word Cleveland.
The Drew Carey Show?
The Drew Carey Show is another. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame
is
a third.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But in
and the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Down in Canton.
Nearby in Canton, but more so the Rock and Roll because it's right there. It's in Cleveland.
Right on the river.
Right on the river, and it's an excellent...
I mean on the river, on the lakefront.
Yeah, on the lakefront, and it's an excellent place to go. But I would tell you that I think football, first and foremost, even though a lot of it has not been good, certainly in recent years. And so that got me to thinking, and because, I'm a throwback kind of guy, and I realize that the majority of our audience may not be as throwback as I am. But one of the questions I wanted to toss out to our fans today is pre-1970s football players.
Pre-merger.
Mm. Pre-merger players. Before the AFL merged with the NFL. All right, now some of us go back that far and actually have a conscious memory of what football was like, what players were like, what athletes were like. And if you don't go back that far, I would ask you to consider the question in a little different vein, but I'd be curious to your answer. What's the one big-time football player from pre-merger days you wished you could have seen play? And the reason I say that is because two names came immediately to my mind. And they're both Cleveland Browns.
Jim Brown.
That's one.
That was the first one I thought of,
actually. That's definitely one. And I'm talking about seeing play in person.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I saw Brown play on TV in the early days when he was still playing in the 60s. I was too young to really realize it at the time, but I saw him play. But the one that I really remember playing a bit on television was in that time frame, late 60s to post-merger. To me, that comes to mind most prevalently, and that's Leroy Kelly.
Not ringing a bell.
Okay. Running back.
Okay.
Good running back. Very good number 44. I mean, he was a solid running back for the Cleveland Browns back in the late 60s. I believe that in fact Kelly was a part of the Cleveland Browns team, and I'd have to go Google this, and I'm sure somebody will, for me. But I think he was on the Cleveland team that played in the very last playoff bowl. Do you remember the playoff bowl? Do you remember reading about the playoff bowl? That was the game between the two losing conference championship teams when the Super Bowl first came into play.
Oh, like a third place consolation game.
Yes.
Wow. When did that go out of?
Merger.
At the merger?
Yes. I believe at the merger.
Wow.
Or very soon thereafter.
So 69 was the last one?
Yeah, I think so. Right around 69, 70. It may have been. Again, I'd have to look it up, but it was in that time frame.
All right.
Because I remember Dallas playing Cleveland in a playoff bowl game.
Oh, wow.
And
would the game be held? At the team with the better records?
I believe it was. For some reason or other, I think the one that I'm recalling when I was probably around 10, 11 years old was actually in Cleveland because the Cowboys lost it. And I remember being a Cowboy fan as I was growing up, I remember being crushed. We lost a stinking playoff bowl to Cleveland. And it just jumped out at me when I'm thinking about the Browns today. So I figured I would ask the question of our fans today only because, to me, when you think pre-merger football players in the NFL, the one player that is almost unanimously on everyone's list that would love to have seen play is Jim Brown, and he sort of epitomizes the Cleveland Browns and who they were and what they are. And I just thought, you know, that'd be interesting to know. Now, it may not be Jim Brown. It may be somebody else. But it came to mind because I was thinking of Cleveland and I was thinking of great players. Now, you really have to stretch yourself to come up with Cleveland and great players in a present tense. But, you know, they've got some. I don't want to compare anybody on their current roster to Jim Brown because I don't think there's anybody there. There certainly is the capability of having some impact players on that team going forward.
Josh Gordon is certainly exciting.
I don't think there's any question about that, and he's the one that I was thinking of. But I would also ask you this in a separate sense. Why do you think, since Cleveland re-entered the league, when Baltimore moved to Baltimore and left Cleveland
it was 90, right after Belichick.
Yes, in
96.
96, yes. Yeah. And then
99, they came back.
They came back as an expansion team in 99, mm-hmm. and they have not been able to do anything, really, since that point in time. Why has Cleveland not been able to reestablish itself as a force in the NFL over the last 14 years?
Well, I hadn't really considered it, but, I mean, they had the owner who took over for Modell mm-hmm. in 99 was Al Lerner, correct?
Lerner, that sounds right, yes.
And then he died fairly recently, and they had an ownership change.
Okay.
If I recall
mm-hmm.
correctly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I don't think it's really necessarily that, but they just haven't been able to pick the right coaches, I don't think. I mean, look at some of the guys that have gone through there after, you know, who was the coach when they came back in 99? There's a trivia question for you.
Damn. I thought I knew this, but now I'm not so sure. If you said it, I'm sure it would immediately jump in, but that's not fair.
Because I'm drawing a blank on it too. Who coached the new Cleveland Browns originally in 1999?
All right. Well, we're gonna have
that's another one we're gonna have to do a little.
We gotta figure that one
but
out.
But my point is they've had, and I think a lot of the league is experiencing this, John. And I think that's why a lot of the league's teams there are so few teams that are always in the hunt every year. In part,
Chris Palmer,
former BU guy. I should have known that.
And Patriot offensive coordinator,
yeah.
quarterback coach.
Yeah.
It was Chris Palmer.
Chris Palmer started things out again. That's right.
And then Butch Davis came along, and
right.
then Butch Davis
Not
didn't
very
really.
Long.
No, he didn't really have the success that he
How many
thought
years
he would
was
have.
He, there?
He went back. He was there for 3-4 years, 01 to 04 through 04.
So 4 years.
And then Terry Robiski came in when he left. Remember to go uh-huh. to Miami. I uh-huh. think it was right.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was Romeo Crennel. And yep. he had 4 largely unsuccessful years.
Yeah.
Eric Mangini came in and had a couple of miserable years.
Yeah.
And then Pat Shermer had mm-hmm. A miserable 2 years. And
yep.
now Rob Trudzinski. So I'm just like
turnover.
Yeah. So they have not had.
There hasn't been.
But have they spent the money to find the right guy?
I certainly think those guys that went in there were well paid, but. I think they rolled the dice on some of these
guys. Do you realize that they have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different men be head coach since Bill Belichick left in 1996, right?
Yeah.
7 different guys have been the coach.
And in that whole time,
no one has as many wins as Belichick had in his 5 seasons.
5 seasons in Cleveland.
That's right.
And Belichick has been here the whole time.
Right.
99 excluded, obviously, but essentially the whole time that the Browns have been back in the NFL, Belichick has been with New England.
It's amazing.
There's been steadiness here in New England. There's steadiness for the most part in Pittsburgh, another team that is perennially in the hunt. You know, ownership and then coaching. Bill Cowher was there for a long time, and now Mike Tomlin is setting a new precedent there.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that typically do well and are in the hunt year after year tend to be stable franchises with regard to ownership, coaching, and star players. Cleveland hasn't had that.
And, of course, the Patriots have, and we've seen that. And you could make the argument that they might have had that going, but then they went and lost the franchise and moved it to Baltimore, and then that's when Bill Belichick upped and left.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if they had never left Cleveland,
they might have been better off.
Do you think they would have kept him, or would they have canned him?
I think they were far closer to winning a Super Bowl with Belichick. They were on a track to win a Super Bowl quicker with Belichick in the early 90s than they have been since then.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
And
obviously, they had to start from scratch.
Well, obviously they had to start from scratch, yes. But I think that just goes to show how in the NFL and just in our society in general, there's this win now and instant gratification mentality where people and teams and owners and organizations aren't willing to invest in the necessary time that it takes to develop a program. Everybody wants the quick fix turnaround, and if you don't do it in a year and a half, look at Josh McDaniels in Denver, how quickly they tired of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just him. I mean, there's so many examples you can show of coaches that have been fired far sooner. I mean, how realistic is it to expect most of these people to come in and turn fortunes around that quickly? I think it's absurd. The teams that are willing to go through some of those growing pains are the ones. I mean, look at New England. They started off rough with Belichick. They got to the Super Bowl the next year. They missed the playoffs the year after that. They stuck with it, though. You know, they believed in what they were doing, and they stuck with their plan. The rest of the league be damned. We're going to try it our way. We're going to bash our heads into the wall until it works. And for them, it worked. And some of these teams just give up too soon.
Well, I think you can certainly make that case for Cleveland. But as far as the old-timers are concerned and the players pre-merger, pre-1970, that come to mind, I'll give you another one that I would love to have seen that I never got a chance to see. But he was a Cleveland Brown, too. In addition to my choices of Brown and Kelly, okay, there was another one. And he was one of the best to have ever played his position.
Lou Groza.
Yes!
Really?
Nice! And I knew you'd get that because you were a kicker. You had to, because he had he had the quintessential nickname, The Toe. I mean, come on. What does the guy do? He kicks.
Right?
I would love to have seen the guy play. You know, the old straightforward, you know.
Yeah.
That was well before soccer-style kicking. And
became vogue.
You could figure out that, you know, actually swinging leg at an angle would give you more torque toward the ball and boot it further. But these guys, I mean, you had to have some big thighs and some strong legs. If you're going head-on with these things, man, you had to have quite a wallop, pack quite a wallop in your leg. So, yeah, Lou the Toe Groza is another one that I would love to have seen. He played primarily back in the 1940s and I think early 1950s. I think he helped win a championship for Cleveland, in fact, 1950, against the New York Giants by kicking a game-winning field goal. Clearly, the name of the franchise, Paul Brown, you know, the coach of the Browns back then.
Yep.
I would, the namesake and the first coach and first all everything, I would love to have seen a Browns game under his management because they've fallen well short of that time.
Belichick references him all the time.
Sure. You know, learn, you know, from him or learned of him, learned the style, learned.
We've got that clip on the PFW show, Kevin, of Bill saying going back to the 40s with Paul.
He didn't go back.
Kevin's not paying.
No.
Kevin's not paying attention.
No. Bill's not quite that old. But I would just, you know.
No, but references.
He references that. Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Paul Brown.
Yeah. You had, gosh.
How about Chuck Bednarik?
That would be another one. In fact, it just had an emailer here. He doesn't give his name.
Frank Gifford.
Gifford would be another one that I would love to have seen. But, yeah, somebody here just emailed in three players they'd like to see pre-1970. Chuck Bednarik, Night Train Lane,
okay.
Sammy Baugh.
Slingin'
Sammy Baugh, who is obviously he was a quarterback at TCU, quarterback then for the Washington Redskins, and in the 1940s, a superstar back in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. He would have been another player that I would love to have seen physically play the game. That's another one. So those are all good choices. Again, our opening question of the day today is, you know, thinking, you know, Cleveland and old time football, because that's really when Cleveland, I think, was relevant. And we're talking about basically pre-AFL-NFL merger in 1970. What old-time players, what pre-merger players would you like to have seen that you never got a chance to see play? Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. You can give us a phone call on this one, too, today. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. You can also hit me up on Twitter, and I'm damn near close to the 2,000. We just got to push this over the limit somehow. It's at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. So, yeah, some very good names already popping up there. But I it just seemed to me that, you know, Jim Brown was at the top of the list.
Yep.
Kelly was another one that came into play.
Unitas.
Lou the Toe Groza, Johnny Unitas. Although I remember seeing Johnny U play on television. And I remember seeing him play more than anybody. In fact, he was the very first quarterback as a little kid I tried to emulate in the backyard with my little brother. I was Johnny U, just because that's just, that's a football name, Johnny U, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that, Johnny U.
Yeah.
That's a football name.
Everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think even to this day, you know, he's no longer with us, but even to this day, when you say Johnny U, I think most sports fans would say, oh, yeah, wasn't he a football player? Sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and certainly he's still revered, I think, in Louisville, where he played his college football as well.
It's funny that he can get all different types of fans, sporting fans, to know who he is. Johnny Unitas.
Well, that was part of the, I remember that was part of the thing when he was playing back then, you know, Johnny Unitas. You know, and even though he spelled his name Unitas, you know, you certainly sounded like,
it's,
you know, Unite Us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So he was that, sort of a singular figure, if you will.
Pop culture.
Yeah, pop culture kind of icon. Mm-hmm. All right, so there are some others. I'd be curious to know who are other old-time pre-merger players that you would have loved to have seen. Were any of them, by the way, Cleveland Browns? Also be curious to note that. I'm sure, you know, Jim Brown would come to the list, but is there somebody?
Otto Graham?
He would be another one, and that's a Cleveland Brown. That's a good one. He was in the old All-American Football Conference, as you recall, when Cleveland was a part of that back in the 1940s. And, yeah, Otto Graham, I've heard a lot of things about how he was maybe a generation ahead of his time in terms of throwing the football.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, you know, you didn't have guys wing it like you have now in the spread offenses, but Otto Graham was the kind of guy that you looked at back then. If you actually got a chance to see him on old film, you could say, wow, that's a guy that could play today.
Yeah, the way he threw the ball.
Just the way he threw the ball around, you know, looked like he had great arm strength. He had great vision.
The ball was so different back then, too.
It was more of
puffy and...
Yeah, it was more round than oblong.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more...
Didn't have points at the end as much as it was sort of...
It was more of a...
Curved.
Yes, it was a different ball. You're right, it was not as easy to grip. So in order to be effective back then, I think you had to have big hands as a quarterback.
And you can even see, like, their throws are almost like sort of like wind-ups.
You never saw a pure... You rarely saw a pure spiral in the old film. If you go back and you look at it, and I'm sure you can YouTube some of it and find it, but you never really saw what you would call a tight spiral. You always saw a little wobble of the ball, and that's because the ball was not, as you suggested, the same shape as it is today. So whenever a quarterback did throw a tight spiral, you knew the quarterback had something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big hands, ability to grip, ability to throw. Otto Graham had that, at least in my estimation, based on the limited amount that I've seen of him, you know, in film. And again, that's an old Cleveland Brown. So I wonder how Browns fans feel about this. And if we've got Browns fans listening today, I'd love to get some feedback. Number one, on what you mentioned earlier, the continuity factor. And do you wish you still had Bill Belichick there? Would he still be there today? Was there enough growing frustration over his closed attitude and my way or the highway, you know, back there and learning through a trial by fire back then? And of course, the Browns move away and everything's moot and he moves on. But would you have run him off then? Would you still have him as coach today had the Browns never left for Baltimore? I'd be curious to know what Browns fans feel about that, to be honest with you.
I think they would. I think they would have liked to keep him.
You know, I always got the impression that
looking back, I don't know. At the time, they wanted to run him out.
When you consider the last 14 years or so, then of course you would have kept him. But I got the impression, though, that they were ready to do away with him.
Oh, yeah.
As you recall, back in the mid-90s, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, can you believe that's been almost 20 years now? That's a long damn time.
Yeah. We're old, John.
Shut up. Speak for yourself. I mean, I get the impression that, you know, you know, there's a lot of stuff that Cleveland fans probably wish had not happened had the franchise never moved, and whether or not they want to, you know, blame the ownership for moving it out and you know, moving it on.
I just think it's too bad that, like, it's too bad that if Art Modell wanted to leave Cleveland so badly, why the NFL just didn't give him a Baltimore franchise, and why they couldn't find an owner. They obviously found one 3 years later to start the new Cleveland franchise. Why they couldn't have found an owner at the time to keep those Browns, the now Ravens, as the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't.
And if they, you know, start a new franchise.
That's a great question. That's a great question.
In Baltimore.
Yeah. Because that's probably what should have happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Certainly makes sense. Like, Mary Kay Cabot covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealers, who we were talking about a little bit earlier, and she joined us here inside the playbook. Mary Kay, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Wonderful. Good. Thanks for taking some time. Maybe you can help us out with the conversation we were just starting. You know, any thoughts at all to when the Browns became the Browns again back in the late 90s, whether or not, and maybe you can just kind of enlighten us on the history here from a Cleveland perspective, but why it was never discussed finding a different ownership, perhaps first and foremost in Cleveland, to take over the Browns rather than allowing Art Modell to move them to Baltimore?
Well, it was mostly a financial decision on the part of the Modells. They had an opportunity to make millions of dollars on their investment by moving the team to Baltimore, and it was basically a financial decision on Art Modell's part to provide for his family for years to come by going and taking the amazing deal that he got from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So it was really more just an economic situation for him.
Just a money thing then, altogether.
Yep.
Okay.
It was.
All right, second sort of in theory question here. Had the Browns stayed and not, you know, moved to Baltimore, would Bill Belichick still be the coach?
I don't know that he would still be the coach because, you know, that was a lot of years ago. You know, maybe he would have been. I think it would have helped him, you know, if he would have been able to get. I mean, you have to have the quarterback. You know, you have to have the quarterback.
Yep.
So, you know, if they would have ended up with, you know, a Tom Brady-like quarterback, perhaps he would still be the coach. That's been the number one problem of this organization. But I will say, I do think that they did have the team on the right track. I mean, they were 11-5 the year before the move.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill Belichick and Mike Lombardi, they had it. They had the team going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the fruits of their effort were, you know, actually played out in Baltimore, and they went on to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, so I do think that he would have been very successful here. He would have had to have overcome the whole Bernie Kosar thing. That was.
I was just going to say, they couldn't squeeze any more time out of Bernie Kosar, could they?
Yeah, no. But I mean, that was such a lightning rod, that whole situation. So, you know, they would have had to come up with a quarterback. But if they could have found one, they would have been successful.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll kind of segue that then into the present day Browns, obviously, because I know that's a little bit more in your wheelhouse, so to speak. And let's start with the quarterback. Who the heck's going to play here on Sunday?
You know, that's a great question. I was surprised when I showed up today and Jason Campbell had not yet been cleared for practice. I was kind of expecting that he would be named the starter, that he would have been cleared by today. But, you know, independent docs have to get involved, and he just has not passed the baseline test that would allow him to get on the field yet. So they signed Caleb Haney yesterday. So right now we watched practice today, and it was Caleb Haney and Alex Canny out there, two guys anybody, you know, people have, like, barely heard of course. Caleb Haney has started 4 games. He's gone 0-4, 3 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Alex Canny hasn't started an NFL game. So the way that this is shaping up is not good for the Browns. And, you know, they're just waiting to see if Jason Campbell gets the green light. I think he would be closer than Brandon Whedon. So, you know, we'll have to see. Rob Chudzinski said today he could push it all the way right up to game time if he has to.
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, from a Browns perspective, that's tough to prepare either way you look at. It seems to me that, you know, if the Browns are serious about trying to win this game, as long as he can be clear, Jason Campbell's got to be the guy, right?
I would think so, yes. I would think that Jason would be the guy. Even though Brandon Whedon threw for 370 yards last week and connected incredibly well with Josh Gordon, who is just playing lights out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think that the 3 turnovers that he had in the second quarter, in the final couple minutes of the second quarter that led to 13 points in the last 1:19 of the second quarter of that game. Not sitting well with anyone. He's kind of lost the confidence of the defense. They keep coming out after games and saying, we can't win, we're turning the ball over. And so I think that everyone would be very, very excited to get Jason Campbell back in there. But will they rush him back? I don't know. It's just hard to say at this point.
Bill Belichick was saying today about the quarterback situation there that whoever's taking the snaps is going to be running the Cleveland offense. And I know that sounds simplistic, but what he means, I think, is they do the same things no matter who the quarterback is. It's not like they've, at least from his perspective, watching their film, that they're not doing much different whether it's Brian Hoyer or Campbell or Whedon or whoever is behind there, taking snaps. Is that what you're seeing too?
Yeah, I mean, they have a philosophy and a scheme, and they'll stick with that. However, right now they're almost a one-trick pony offense. They really don't have much of a running game this year. You know, they traded away Trent Richardson. Not that they would have had much of a running game with him around either, because we all know, he's struggling over there in Indianapolis too. But they don't have much of a running game to rely on right now, and all they really have is Josh Gordon. Jordan Cameron has even fallen into a bit of a slump. So it's the Josh Gordon show around here lately. He's coming off 261 yards and 237 the week before that. Just phenomenal back-to-back performances. So I would imagine that Bill Belichick is doing everything he can to scheme and game plan for Josh Gordon. And if he takes him out of the game, the Browns will be hard-pressed to move the football.
Mary Kay Cabot again covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, joining us here in Patriots Playbook. So, I think most fans are probably at least familiar to an extent with Josh Gordon. You say that Jordan Cameron has kind of fallen off the radar just a little bit lately. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know what? He got off to a great start, and teams just started, kind of trying to take him out of the game and shutting him down. So they're jamming him at the line of scrimmage. They're hitting him again over the top. They're giving him extra attention at times. And, they have just kind of brought him back down to earth a little bit with extra attention and extra coverage. And then I think the quarterback, the lack of continuity at the quarterback position has hurt him. I don't think he's adjusted particularly well to three different quarterbacks already this season.
My question is, if Cleveland is such a one-trick pony, as you said, on offense, and Gordon is the show, how is he doing it? How is he? How is he getting away with it when the other team knows exactly that he's going to get the ball?
That's a great question. He does a really nice job of getting open, and even when he is covered, he's catching the ball. He could be the most talent. I think he's the most talented, naturally gifted receiver that I've ever covered here, in 20 some years of covering this team. He just has a natural raw ability to get open and to catch the football, and he catches it with his hands beautifully. He makes it look really, really easy, and even though teams have been keying on him, he's finding a way to get the job done. So it's going to be a great matchup between Tlaib and Josh Gordon, and I know he's done a nice job on a lot of guys this year. And it'll be really interesting to see if Josh can have success against him.
Is he getting doubled much?
He is getting doubled at times, but not as much as you would think. It's not like, what you see more than anything is that there are times where he is inexplicably singled or left kind of open. And that's the part that's been a bit puzzling, is that, you find that you can find him open at times. I don't know why teams aren't doubling him a little bit more, and maybe they're working on taking Jordan Cameron out of the game a little bit more than they have been Josh. But teams just haven't been doing what I think Bill Belichick will do, and that is double him plenty.
Mary Kay, I can tell you that, from a respect factor, Patriots fans are certainly familiar with Josh Gordon, because that was the one name that came up almost most prevalently before the trading deadline, came about. It's like, hey, let's go out and get this Josh Gordon kid from Cleveland because they're out of it. And so I think people recognize his ability. My question to you would be then, is he a chip still for Cleveland to bargain with to continue to build this team, or is he somebody now that they've decided we got to keep this guy at all costs and build around him?
I think they're going to keep him and build around him. I think that their only hesitation with him whatsoever was the fact that he's one strike away from being banished from the league for a year. But they're very comfortable with the program that he's working. They're very comfortable with the support system that they have around him, and they just really love his work ethic now. He's really turned it around. I mean, he's just gotten his priorities straight. He's learning what it takes to be a pro, and he's just exceeded everyone's expectations this year. He's a really kind of a neat young man. He's an artist. He paints. He's designed these elaborate tattoos on his body. He's very, very, very smart. When you talk to him, it's almost surprising because he hasn't. You know, he was out of football for 2 years before he came to the Browns because he'd gotten kicked out of Baylor and Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you speak to him, it seems like he's been handling big media interviews for years and years. He's a natural at that, in the same way he's a natural in catching the football.
Has he said what turned it around for him?
You know, I think he just realized that he was, you know, one strike away. And, you know, like everybody had said, you know, Joe Banner even said at the beginning of the year, you know, the rope that's left isn't long. And he knew it, and everybody knows it. And, you know, he can either have a wonderful, long, storied NFL career, or he can get kicked out and go find something else to do.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, well, then let's flip it over to the other side as well, because I know that while in the trenches, things seem to have been at least started out well enough. Defensively, where is this team right now? What kind of problems is Rob Chudzinski having basically put his team in position to try to stop people?
Well, you know what? First of all, they're supposed to be a very attack-minded defense, and there's been some guys that have been underachieving a little bit that were supposed to be their premier pass rushers.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Kruger, their big blockbuster offseason signing, has 2.5 sacks. Well, a cornerback that just went on injured reserve in Chris Owens, he also has 2.5 sacks. You would expect way more than 2.5 sacks from Paul Kruger at this point. He came over here from Baltimore seeking to prove that he was a great player in his own right and not just in the shadow of Terrell Suggs and that great Baltimore defense. He wanted to come over and show that he's an every-down player and that he could shine and excel, not just because he was opposite Terrell Suggs and some of those other guys on Baltimore's defense. He has not been able to get the sack totals or the pressures or any of the other impact plays that you would expect from a blockbuster pick that you paid $40 million for in the offseason. So he needs to step it up. Barkevious Mingo, he started out with 3 sacks, 1 in each of his first 3 games. He's tailed off to, I think it's 1 in his last 7 now, or maybe even 8 games, that he's had 1 sack. That's from your number 6 overall pick, whose job, his basically primary job, is to rush the passer and get to that quarterback. So 1 sack in the last 7 or 8 games, absolutely unacceptable. Same thing with Jabal Sheard. He's coming off of a knee injury, but once again, he had a big goal to get 20 sacks this year. It's written in his locker even.
Mm.
He hasn't, you know, he's not going to even come close to that this year. So, you know, these guys were supposed to be, you know, just relentless, and they haven't been that. Now, if they can't get there, they're going to have to at least try to get Tom Brady off of his mark and disrupt him a little bit. But right now, I mean, you don't have anybody on this team that has more than 4 sacks, and that's Barkevious Mingo.
Wow.
He had, you know, the bulk of those in the first 3 games.
How much did putting Chris Owens on IR earlier this week, how much did this hurt in the secondary?
I think it hurts. I think it hurts because now you're down to a very, very inexperienced rookie in Leon McFadden who hasn't been able to get on the field all season long. And there's a reason for that. If he was good enough to have been on the field before this or better than Chris Owens, he would have been there by now. He hasn't been. So I do think it definitely hurts them. I don't know if they're going to put Leon in the slot or if they'll put Buster in the slot. Now, Buster's having a nice season, Buster Screen. He's overachieved and done a nice job there opposite Joe Hayden. He leads the team with 22 pass breakups, and it seems like every time you're looking up, he's knocking the ball away from somebody. So he's done a great job. And Joe, for the most part, has shut down receivers and has had a very nice season, except when he gave up the game-winning touchdown pass. He made a boneheaded move, really. It was a slant and go on a 3rd and 9, and he did on the short slant, which, you know, even he realized afterwards, why would they do that in that situation? So he bid on that, and he gave up the pass to Cecil Short, game-winning touchdown pass after Brandon Weeden had brought the team back and had them in position to win the game on a 95-yard touchdown pass to Josh Gordon, which 77 yards of that was in the air.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of split two guys and just took off, and you know, it was just a great comeback by them, but the defense blew it at the end.
Right. You know, and it kind of brings us back to quarterback again. Somebody that's got to get the ball to Josh Gordon. Somebody that's got to be healthy enough to play. Injuries notwithstanding, why has it not seemed to work for Brandon Weeden?
You know, well, first of all, he's in the second year of, you know, it's a new system for him in the second year. Everybody around him was learning the new system. You know, that so that was part of it. You know, he throws too many interceptions. He takes too long to get rid of the football. He's been sacked 24 times. And 27 times, actually, now. He's in sacked 27 of the Browns, I think, 39 sacks. So he holds onto the ball just a little bit too long. And then he is also a little bit hamstrung by the lack of talent around him. Although Brian Hoyer was able to overcome that, Jason Campbell was able to overcome that. Brandon really hasn't panned out. And, you know, if he doesn't get back in there and show some things in these last few games, he's going to have trouble sticking around with this team beyond this year.
Interesting. Mary Kay, thanks so much for the knowledge. We appreciate your bringing us up to date, and safe travels this way to Foxborough this weekend.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
All right, see you Sunday.
Mary Kay Cabot, again, who covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. That's one smart lady right there. You can tell us she's got a lot of depth of knowledge about
been
that
doing
football
it for a long
team.
Time, too.
20-plus years, as she suggested, yeah. as well. To me, the Browns are just a great big enigma, big question mark, you know, honestly. They're 4-8. They seem like they certainly, as she sort of intimated, have more talent to be better than 4-8. I mean, could they be 6-6? They probably could be. They probably should be. And it sounds to me, if they'd had some consistency at play from the quarterback slot, more specifically, that they'd be right there in the mix for that last wild card spot along with teams like Miami right now, just because they do have talent. And that's the one thing that I wanted to try to get across here, in addition to Josh Gordon, who to me, is got to be one of the best young receivers in the game today, and I understand why a lot of Patriots fans were clamoring for the pass to try to swing a deal. I you know, certainly can understand why Cleveland would want to try to build around this guy, but the question is going to have to be asked fundamentally, I think, by the Browns in the offseason. You know, do they have a quarterback they can build on to get the ball to a guy like Gordon in the offseason, or do they go after a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, who seems to be rising to the top of the list of all the college quarterbacks that are out there right now, especially with the announcement yesterday that Marcus Mariota from Oregon is going to stay put in school.
Mm-hmm.
So, curious.
Yeah, I think they'll have to look for a new quarterback. I don't think that the answer is on their roster right now. I was never a Weeden fan, Brandon Weeden fan.
Neither was I, but I understand why they took a gander at him. Frankly think they screwed up when they let Colt McCoy go, and they benched McCoy. Because at least McCoy is one of those game-managing type of guys, and not just because he's from Texas strippers, so just get over that, all right? But he had enough talent where he could manage the game. He had a good fiery attitude, almost a Brady-like attitude about him. And he had a decent enough arm, at least to my estimation. Maybe not quite the foot speed, but again, we're talking Tom Brady here, and he's managed to do pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just thought they gave up on him a little bit too early. And I wasn't sure that Weeden really beat him out, as opposed to how they just decided, oh, he's the flavor of the month.
Right.
And I think Brown's management should be put at fault for something like that more than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and now McCoy's gone off to back up in San Francisco.
Right.
You know, so he could have a job, basically.
Yeah. So at least he's got a job.
Yeah,
in
he's
the
got
NFL.
One. He's
so.
Got one.
But, yeah, and Jason Campbell's not the long-term
answer. He's a stopgap.
Yeah,
he's a stopgap.
Perfect description.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if Teddy Bridgewater will be any better for them if they're able to take a shot at drafting him. I mean, right now they're 4-8, so where's that going to put them in
And the Jaguars have 3 wins?
Yeah, Jags have 3 now.
It's 3 more than I thought they were going to have.
I agree. So, I mean, you don't really know where the Browns yet are going to fall in the pecking order. I mean, Bridgewater's thought to be anywhere from like 5 to 8 maybe in the opening round, at least based on what I was seeing from someone like Mel Kiper yesterday. And can they, you know, will he be there to select at that point in time? I mean, that's an awful large-sized gamble for something like that, at least at this early stage of the game before we get to next April.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, a little bit of insight on the Cleveland Browns. I hope that helps you out there. Our good friend Steve in Killeen, Texas, is on the line. Steve, welcome to the playbook.
Hey, John. Thanks. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Historic players.
Historic players is what we were talking about before we got into the Browns, and you obviously get why, you know, I went that direction, because in thinking Cleveland, when they were in their heyday, who are some of the great players in the NFL that come to mind? And frankly, you could start with Jim Brown, and then you kind of work on down the list from there.
Yeah, and as a kid, the long-running joke was, you know, Jim Brown was so good, they had to name the team after him.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people do think that the team was named after him, but, you know, I believe it came from the coach and founder and GM and grand poobah in Cleveland, Paul Brown.
And actually, one of the twists, John, with the playoff bowl was Gifford actually called, like, the later half of this. I was a toddler at that time, and you know, I don't want to date myself too much, but that was kind of the twist there as far as, you know, Giff as a player and then later on becoming the broadcaster that most people know him as.
What year was that? Was that 70?
I think he started in 69.
Okay.
So, like, 67, 68, 69, like the last two, three games. I'll have to go back and double-check to be sure, but, yeah, he ended up calling some of those last few games.
Yeah, it was 60 through 69. So, yeah, I'm looking at it now. And 1960 through the 69 season, so that would have been 1970, right? After the merger happened, no more playoff bowl. But it was a postseason game for third place in the NFL.
Right.
And I remember one of the last games that was played, as I look at the scores here and the appearances, the last game that was played was between the Rams and the Cowboys. The Browns played in the game 1968. And lost to the L.A. Rams at the time. So the Browns actually were in three appearances and were 0-3 in the playoff bowls. There were three teams that made three playoff bowl appearances in the history of the game. Lions, Cowboys, and Browns. And the Browns never won. Hmm. The Lions, by the way, never lost.
Yeah, and I'm third sure place all the time, huh?
Third place all the time.
I'm sure if you take some time, you'll find it about Lombardi's feeling off the playoff bowl.
Yeah.
As far as I believe his phrase was hinky dink back in the day.
But ugly experience with what?
Yeah, he as far as the playoff bowl.
Right.
And what Lombardi's feelings were, you know, it's a hinky dink game.
Oh, yeah.
Hinky dink rotation by hinky dink games.
Right.
In other words, Lombardi, his whole attitude was, we'll never play in it because we're the Green Bay Packers.
Right, exactly.
And that was pretty much true. In the case of Gordon, on the Browns, the one name that kind of jumped to the forefront as far as just kind of, you look at him and it's like, how did he do what he does? I put him in kind of the same category of Steve Largent back in the day for the Seahawks. He's a guy that you look at him and it's like, well, he's not a burner, but somehow he just gets open and he makes plays. And you know, Mary alluded to that about him as far as he just gets open. And that was kind of Steve Largent's thing as well. You know, you look at him and you don't understand how the guy can always be there and make the catches that he does.
That's an interesting comparison. I would suggest to you that I think most people feel like Gordon has more natural ability than Largent. Largent was a guy that could beat you with his head as well as with his talent on the field. He was a guy that in the Wes Welker mold that your quarterback could rely on. Now, he wasn't necessarily a slot receiver, but I'm just saying he was a reliable guy that you know is going to get plenty of targets every week, as I recall. So, but I think that the comparison is not an inaccurate one, no.
That's pretty much all I have right now, John.
Give me an old-time player. You started it. Give me an old-time player.
Probably Night Train Lane would be the guy I'd probably most want to see play.
Does anybody know how Night Train got his nickname?
I've heard this before.
I used
can't
to
remember
the story of that, John. I honestly can't remember.
Yeah,
I might have to
either.
Look that one up again, too. I've always thought that was one of the coolest nicknames. I mean, nicknames in old school football are the absolute best. Yep. When you have Night Train Lane and Lou the Toe Groza, and you had
the Galloping Ghost.
Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Well, that's, yeah. Now, he was obviously post-merger, yeah. But Billy White Shoes Johnson is, I mean, pretty obvious because he wore white shoes. Mm. And he did the funky, you know, chicken dance in the end zone after he scored a touchdown before the NFL decided, okay, we can't have any of that. Yeah, you know, that was true.
No fun league.
Mm-hmm. No fun league at all. Yeah, definitely a better era for names and kidding around and stuff like that. I'd give you that one. Good stuff, Steve.
All right, I appreciate it. You guys keep up the great work, and I've already talked to Kevin. Next week, look for the good stuff to come.
You are indeed a gentleman and a scholar.
All right, I appreciate it, John. Keep great work.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Steve in Killeen, Texas. All right, so, you know, I hope that we can kind of keep that conversation going in the second hour, because I'm going through some of the records here of some of the pre-1970 players. I'm kind of just trying to look around a little bit at it and consider the playoff bowl and the history of the Cleveland Browns and everything else. And frankly, there's some really great names that are out there. And I'd like to see if you know, anybody actually remembers, you know, some of these players coming up. What worries you the most then about Cleveland this week, other than the individual aspect of the game? Is anything come to mind yet?
I mean, the only thing I can that I'm really worried about is, you know, their inability to stop a guy like Josh Gordon. He's the only weapon they have, really, that's performing consistently, and that's an area where they have had some trouble. So I'm kind of interested to see what they do with him, whether or not, as you know, Mary Kay said, a lot of teams aren't doubling him. And I wonder what Matt Patricia and Belichick are going to do.
One of the issues that I brought up yesterday on the show that we really kind of wanted to dive in a little bit more, you know, this week, if we have the chance, is the issue of run defense. And because they got gouged by Denver, even though it seemed like the game plan might have been a little bit more to allowing Denver to have what they wanted running the ball, didn't seem to be quite that way against Houston. And then obviously, you know, they had a pretty good, you know, game running the ball as well with Tate last week. So, in your estimation, where is it coming from? Is it coming from just an inability to be in the right spot at the right time, or are the linebackers in particular being instructed to play a certain way that allows this team to give up the yardage?
Well, what I'm seeing on the film is just the opposing offensive lines are having their way with our D-line.
Defensive line.
You know, executing blocks well, and our front seven just aren't fighting off those blocks very well. I mean, maybe there's more to it than that, but that's what I'm seeing when I go back and look on Mondays.
Is it because the two rookie tackles are just undersized compared to, you know, Will Fork and Kelly, or just not as experienced, or
that might have something to do with it? They, you know, they might just not have that natural ability.
Well, I'm not going to compare them physically, either one of those guys, but I'm just saying, you know,
it might not be.
They started out so well,
but I mean, Spikes has been dealing with a knee injury. He's not himself. He's been getting pushed around. Hightower gets lost in the wash. Even Sopoaga a few times was getting, you know, was getting blocked in a way that you wouldn't expect a veteran like him to get blocked. You know, that they were just, they weren't putting up a fight, it seemed like, on that front seven, and that's troubling, because you might be able to get away with it now, but I don't think you're going to be able to get away with it in January.
So,
if you fall behind and another team
decides
that they want to milk the clock and just run the ball,
I
don't think you're going to be able to get away with it.
I don't know that Cleveland is this team, and I know Cleveland's had a pretty good offensive line, but you know, they obviously have given up some sacks to the quarterback, part of the reason why they're in the trouble they're in with the dings and the concussions and things like that.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that, you know, if it's not Cleveland, somebody's going to decide, you know what, let's test these Patriots. Let's see if they really can stop the run. Let's pound
run
on
it all the time.
Yeah, because I thought Houston kind of blew a chance. I thought that was part of what made Antonio Smith's comments about, oh, spying and all that.
Yeah.
So funny. It's like, well, dude, you know, stick to your game plan. Run the damn ball up our throats or down our throats, as the case may be, and let's see if you ever get to this point. You just didn't adjust. They didn't adjust. The Patriots did, and you didn't stop anybody either. So, you know, when does it come about where teams decide, you know what, let's run the ball to these guys and let's test that soft underside?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's going to be this week because they just don't have it in that area. But I worry that if they face a team when it counts and they fall behind and they start doing that, whether or not they'll be able to come back, I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
The games get tougher. The teams get better. And
I was under the impression, Eric, just so you know, I was under the impression that this was more the linebackers doing what they were being asked to do in game planning, as opposed to their inability to run up and stop the run. And then certainly against Denver, less so last week. Because it certainly looked like Dante Hightower again reverted back to the older Dante Hightower we had seen and had trouble in coverage.
Yeah, and I think that's who he is. Yeah. I really do.
I would agree. I think we're asking him to do something he's not really supposed to be doing. Yeah.
He was billed that way, though. He was billed as being able to do all these things.
But he's not.
No.
And so that's why I'm, you know, now we gave Gerard Mayo plenty of time to be able to, you know, come into his own as a linebacker before, you know, after drafting him, because he didn't have quite the initial impact I think that a lot of fans thought thought he would have either.
No.
So that's why I'm saying don't throw Dante Hightower out with the bathwater just yet.
No, but I don't expect much more improvement than we've already seen.
Based on?
It's year two, John. Your guy is going to either make it or not after year two. Well, no. Through year two.
Oh, okay. I would say you would have seen it. We're talking about this same thing this time next year. I'll agree with you 100%.
And I think we're going to be. I don't think there's going to be much change between now and then.
All right, fair enough. Let's get Tyrone in Delaware in here. Tyrone, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing? Glad to see you back, John. I'm from St. Thomas, and I heard you was down in St. Thomas last week when I listened, man.
I was there.
I didn't know that.
I was absolutely there. I spent six glorious days in St. Thomas, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, that's where I'm from, man.
Well, I understand why. You know, you got to get your butt back down there. It sounds to me like Tyrone, they miss you.
Well, you know, it's good weather, and I love the water down there. I'm going back in February, actually.
Good for you.
Yeah. Glad we was talking about that defense. I mean, you know. Eric was just bringing it up. The point of the matter is, man, we sugarcoating it. They're just not that good. I mean, and like Eric said, you know, when we meet a team, as a matter of fact, I think we're going to get pirated this week. But when we reach Baltimore, and I think Baltimore getting their mojo back a little bit, I'm thinking, man, they're going to kill us.
Well, I would say, I would agree that I think Baltimore would be ready to run the ball right at us and run it all day long right at us. So, but this does give the Patriots 2 weeks to try to continue to game plan back the other direction and hopefully, you know, try to find some support for a guy like Hightower or even Spikes back there.
Wait, you really think? I agree with Eric too. Dante Hightower is who he is. I mean, he's not going to get no better. I mean.
Yeah.
Ain't Luke Kuechly a third-year player, a second-year player?
He's a second-year player, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Second-year player.
It don't take too long to whether or not you're going to know whether he's going to be a player or not. It don't take too long.
Right.
And he's been given enough chances. I give up on that a long time ago. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And like I said, you know, some of my friends up there in Connecticut, they're getting hype, and I'm like trying to. They're getting the Super Bowl. They're feeling the Super Bowl. And granted, you know, of course, I want the team to win, but you know, I got sucked in one time in 2009 when they got rid of Moss. Or was it 2009 or 10 or 11? I think it was in 2011. They got rid of Moss, and I'm thinking, well, they don't need to stretch the field, so I'm falling into it.
Yeah, I think it was so 10. But that's right.
When the Jets came into town and they smacked us. You know, I was devastated.
Yeah.
You know, so, but since then, I haven't bought into that dink and dunk offense thing. And I'm still not buying into it because, you know, that's all we could do. So, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I got a lot of friends of mine and they really hype and stuff like that. And I'm telling her, I said, look, I put myself out there again because, like I said, it's like we're back to the same place. So, you know, just saying. And one other thing on Sopoaga. The Eagles got rid of him, you know, because since I live in this area, and that's all I can hear is Eagles and Ravens or whatever.
Sure.
And so Boaga, they couldn't wait to get rid of him, you know. And then when I heard we pick him up, I said, oh, no. And, you know, because they got somebody back in. The reason why they got rid of him because they got a young kid named Thornton that was, like, yo, he's making it happen. So they said, man, let's get rid of this dude. And like Eric alluded to, he's getting pushed back around too. So,
but you understand, though, you understand, though, Tyrone, that you got to have numbers. And the Patriots were down numbers. And Isaac Sopoaga may not be the ideal choice, but not only was he a number, he certainly fulfilled a role that they did not have once Vince Wilfork went down.
Yeah, I just wish we... With just like what the Eagles did, I just wish we had somebody in line. So because you always got to account for injury.
Well, I think that's something. I think that's honestly something they need to start addressing. And I think we even said this before the draft this year. This is something they need to start addressing. In addition to the future without Tom Brady, they need to start addressing the future without Vince Wilfork, and that needs to happen next year in the draft.
Yeah.
Next year.
One other thing. Before I go, John, are they still killing you? Because remember back a couple like weeks, when we played the Bengals and you had said about Tom Brady and stuff like that.
No, nobody's,
I agree with you.
Nobody's killing me, Tyrone, although I got a Facebook message that says, hey, how do you like Tom Brady now? And I'm like, you know, I didn't even bother to answer because I'm like, well, because I wasn't going to get sucked into the pissing match, so to speak. But frankly,
yeah, that was
Brady's
so horrible how they were.
Well, but Tyrone, doesn't worry. That doesn't bother me. That's the nature of the beast here. Brady's numbers are better for two primary reasons, and you know what they are. Okay?
Gronk.
Yes.
And what's the other one? Gronk and
Amendola.
What's the other one?
Amendola.
Oh, Amendola.
They're healthy.
High on Amendola. I think I'm not too high on him. I'd rather be honest with you, Elderman, to be honest with you. But I guess it's the injury. Some probably being too hard, but. Yeah, Gronk is the main reason, but still you wasn't off base because, like I said, you know, the window is closing and you don't prepare yourself just like we wasn't prepared since Wilson.
Yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah, there's no question. And Tyrone, thank you.
Right,
I appreciate that. Thanks for coming in my defense, too, bud. I appreciate that. It's not necessary, but I appreciate that. But thing about it is, what's going to happen? In let's say in 6 years when Tom Brady is 42 years old or 43 years old or whatever he's going to be, what is he now, 35, 36?
He's 36.
Yeah. 6 years, he's 42 years old. We're going to pull out another young set of receivers, and you're going to tell me that he's going to be able to get the ball to him? There is a point of diminishing returns. And all I'm saying is that now we can see it. Hmm. Yes, his numbers are better. Why? He's got healthy receivers, and he's still able to get him the ball. 6 years from now, ain't going to happen. Sorry, it's just not going to happen. Not in this day and age. You can't convince me otherwise, unless your name is George Blanda. He played until he was almost 50.
Well,
50. Yeah, he was 50.
Brady's not going to be a kicker.
No, he's not going to be a kicker. I don't think so. All right.
All right, bro.
Got business, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches,
stop
put
looking
on
at
your
that
Argyle
while this is
sweaters, puff on your
You're
corn
cheating.
Cob pipes, and gather around
That's
the fire
research.
For Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
He's reprimanded.
He's looking at his stupid phone over here. Oh, I got to come up with a word.
No, I had a word. I just...
He's got a journal full of words. He's just going to the well.
I do. I like to make sure that... I like to make sure that I have all my bases covered.
Okay. All right, fine.
I also kind of have a feeling I might have used this one before. That's why I kind of had to look.
I knew it. All right.
I was trying to see if
I can actually remember.
I was trying to remember if it was in my history.
Yeah, in your history of your phone.
Yeah.
Right. I know. I get it. All right. Which one were you going to use then?
Peregrination.
You have used that before.
I have?
I think it was about a year ago.
Yeah?
That one sounds familiar.
That's okay. Well, I have a backup.
Okay.
Verdigris.
Verdigris. V-E-R-T-I-G-R-E-E?
No.
No?
V-E-R-D-I-G-R-I-S.
Oh. Oh, Verdigris.
Verdigris.
I should have asked for the root.
Yeah. Close, but no.
I like that. Okay, Verdigris.
Verdigris. French root, verde, green.
Right.
Gray. It's the greenish blue patina that forms on copper and other metals that are left out too long in exposed to the elements.
So you,
you call
that green crud on your copper pipes verdigris?
Verdigris.
Verdigris.
Mm.
Better than
you know what I'm talking about, though.
Yes, like yes, I know, because you get it on your copper piping and your...
It turns that greenish-bluish kind of color. That's
right.
That's what it's.
Well,
that's what it is.
I guess it's better than calling it green crap.
Call it you with the crap
verdigris.
Again today. The Cleveland crap, the green crap.
Cleveland plain dealer crap.
Are you having intestinal issues today, John?
No.
I was going to say, is that copper piping? Is he talking about something else?
right. Some other plumbing that's not working for you?
I don't know. All right. Verdigris. All right, buddy. That's good stuff,
okay.
I think. That's okay. I had not heard that one, though. But it's good, because if you'd said the root of the word, blah, 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 I might have been able to guess it. So I think I would have gotten that one in the spelling bee. You know what? That's what we need to do one of these days. We need to do a spelling bee? We need to do a spelling bee. Problem is, though, you need the judge. Yeah. But the problem is, everybody can't be in it
because he'll kill everybody.
Oh, he would. We totally would. He'd have to judge it, right?
I did win
We should
state
have a playbook spelling bee.
Back when I was 8th grade.
Yeah, Eric would have
seventh,
to judge.
7th grade or 8th grade? Might have been, I can't remember now. I think it was eighth grade.
Could get you won? Robe and a
I won the town spelling bee, went to the States.
Wow.
Yeah.
What town?
North Providence.
Wow. Hmm. That's impressive.
And then I got bumped. I think I've told you this story. I got bumped out on the first word in the States.
What was the
mohair.
Word? Mohair?
I'd never heard it before. Didn't know what it was.
You got no mohair?
Yeah, that's right. Well done. I use it in a sentence. There you go. cracking himself up over here.
You didn't ask. Could you please use that in a sentence?
Yeah, and the guy would have said, you know, in 20 years, you're going to have no mohair. Hair.
Well, you really went bald there.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
It was foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
So I get mohair. I spelled it M-O-W-H-A-I-R because I was going mow like mow the lawn.
Right,
I didn't.
Right.
I'd never heard of it. There's no W. It's just M-O-H-A-I-R.
You really are kind of a nerd, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
And
he's clutched on to that one.
The
for
next
a while.
Word. The next person that came up was this girl, and the word she got was mascara.
Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The fix was in.
Oh, you were robbed.
The fix was in.
You were robbed.
I should have been going to D.C.
I would agree with it. Mascara?
I should have been going to D.C. representing the Ocean
mascara?
State.
Mascara?
Yeah, she got mascara.
That's not right.
I got bumped because of that.
That's not right.
No.
All because you had no mohair.
I had no mohair, and she got to go to D.C.
Damn. All right.
Never forgive her.
All right. Thanks for sticking around.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. All right. Let me get a break in here. Anthony, stick on the line. Want to talk old school football. Is there an old-time player, pre-merger 1970, that you'd love to have seen played? If there is one, think of a name. Think of a character. Think of a person. Think of somebody you know from the archives if you're not old enough to remember. Who would you have loved to have seen play football if you had the chance? Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500. Send me a tweet at JR Broadcaster or on Facebook, John.Rook. Ready, set, go.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha-ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team. From Foxborough all the way to Miami, Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that do not disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month, guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by Metabank, member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Or the toll-free line at 855-PATS-500. Anywhere you're listening, 855-PATS-500. John Rook in the playbook here in hour number two for a Wednesday. Talk a little old school football at the very least, only because, again, if you're just joining us or, you know, fast-forwarding through your podcast today, thinking Cleveland Browns, it immediately comes to mind, you know, old school football, because that's the last time really that the Browns were relevant. And so the question of the day is if there's one old school player, basically pre-merger 1970, that you would wish you could have seen play, who would it be and why? Does anybody remember a quarterback that played for Cleveland named Frank Ryan? Kevin, you remember Frank Ryan? You don't remember that name, do you? His nickname was
I do not.
His nickname was Doc. Now
Doc
I know that,
Ryan?
Yes, his nickname was Frank. You know, his teammates called him Doc. Now I know this for one specific reason, because Frank Ryan went to my high school, and he was long considered one of the leading graduates from Fort Worth Paschal High School. Frank Ryan went there.
So when was he? Was he in Cleveland?
That he was in Cleveland in the 1960s. No, 50s.
Yeah, that was before
1950s. Yeah, it would have been 1950s. But the reason he was called Doc is because he actually had a PhD in mathematics from Rice University.
Impressive.
Yeah, how about that? And he was an NFL quarterback. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there because, frankly, you know, it's one of those useless facts that you can't do anything else with except maybe win a bar bet every now and then. Here's Anthony in Boston. Anthony, thanks for hanging on. You're in the playbook.
Yeah, Anthony here, Salem, Mass. Before I ask my question, I just want to state that I think it's a little premature for all the Ridley trade talk. Anyways.
Well, now, where are you hearing the Ridley trade talk?
Basically on the Patriots app. I've been following the comments and questions.
Ah. Well, you know, honestly, I haven't paid it a whole lot of attention because I think it's silly. I don't think there should be anything to it. You know, first of all, I think this weekend will tell a lot, about how the Patriots really feel about Ridley. I said this yesterday. I'll say it again right now to you and everybody else who's listening. I thought that they made a huge mistake by doing what they did to Ridley last week and making him inactive.
Agree.
That to me is just kind of like rubbing a little puppy's face in his doo-doo, you know?
Yeah,
I didn't.
Absolutely.
That was an embarrassment. The team, the organization made it a story when it should have been a non-story.
Exactly.
They could have suited him up and made him eligible, and they just sat his butt on the bench and you're not playing. You know,
yeah.
If they really wanted to prove a point. Now you've made it a story. Now you've created an issue. Now you got people that are saying, whoa, can we trade him? Can we get something for him? When he's the best back you have.
Yeah, it was almost like they put him on display, you know. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you know, they should at least have him suited up. I mean,
was embarrassing. It really was. I felt badly for him, and to me that was just very unpatriot-like. I happen to think that the Patriots have a little more smarts than that in this organization. They blew that call.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. Anyways, I feel 100% just like you do on that subject. But
yeah.
I just want to ask: do you think Brady's going to avoid Joe Hayden's side of the field in the passing attack? You know, with the type of year he's having.
Well, you have to hope so. I mean, you know, when we were talking a little about the Browns earlier in the program, they're going to do whatever they can to come after him because they don't have anything to lose. I mean, they're 4-8, right? So,
yeah.
You know, they know that the only way that you beat the Patriots and you beat Tom Brady is you have to get after him. And they have had no success getting after anybody over pretty much the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season. So I'm sure that's what they'll game plan, and the offensive line ought to be ready to have their hands full.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. How do you think Tlaib's going to match up against Josh Gordon?
Well, I think that's the one matchup, quite frankly, that everybody is going to want to watch. I mean, you know, I think most everybody kind of feels like, well, the Patriots should win this game going away. Frankly, I can't disagree with that. Because right now, here it is Wednesday, we're talking, we don't know who's going to quarterback Cleveland yet. So because of that, and if this goes, you know, much further, that's a joke. How would he expect someone to come in and play an NFL game basically coming off of the street, like is basically Caleb Haney is doing? If that happens, then, you know, he's just going to throw it up there and hope that Gordon can come down and get it, which really should have Aqib Talib licking his chops, because if a ball is going to be misguided, here's a guy that can make a play on the ball if anybody can in the NFL, right?
Oh,
so,
for sure.
I think clearly that's the one matchup that everybody wants to see. Everybody wants to see, you know, a kid like Gordon play up close and personal. You're going to get a chance. You know he's going to be targeted. And, you know, can he be Superman and, you know, go for 200 bills like he has a couple of times when,
yeah,
you know, the other team is going to be geared up to try to stop him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty big receiver, too, at 6'3". I mean,
I agree, and I understand why a lot of people were clamoring for him, you know, before the trade deadline. It's like, hey, let's make a deal with Cleveland. Let's get the kid Gordon. And as we were told in the opening hour, their opinion is that they really think that they're going to hold on to the guy and try to build around him. But you got to find him a quarterback that will certainly target him with the ball and can be accurate with that target.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so whether that's, you know, a Teddy Bridgewater from Louisville or, you know, Johnny Manziel, I mean, please, can Johnny Manziel see over the center?
Cleveland hasn't had too much success with drafting quarterbacks, although I really think they should have gave Colt McCoy a little bit more time and develop and, you know, at least give him a couple weapons there. You know?
I'm 110% with you on that one. And I said that to Eric in the last hour. I said, you know, they screwed up when they didn't allow Colt McCoy to develop because he had something going. And then they pulled him in favor of the flavor of the day, which was Brandon Whedon, because they thought Whedon was what? More seasons at a quarterback? No. He was just old, period. That was it. Right?
He's an old ginger.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, look, I'm not really trying to denigrate him, but I mean, let's face it. He was a late, collegian because he spent, you know, his early career in minor league baseball before he actually went back to Oklahoma State to finish his degree, and he was eligible to play football well into his mid to late 20s. And so now here's a guy that has a very short window of opportunity, and they're thinking, okay, maybe we've got the convergence right here, that here's a guy in Whedon that's ready to go play now. And so we're going to move him in there. We want him to go. And then what happened? You know, I mean, nothing happened.
That's a terrible choice on their management, you know.
Oh, you got to blame.
Whole,
if you're
whole organization.
Anthony, if you're a Browns fan, you totally have to blame the organization. There's nobody else to blame because they screwed that up. They have proven since the Browns came back into existence in 99, they have proven they can't stay with anything. That's the problem. You have to give something 2 or 3 years in order for it to work. And you thought you had a quarterback. You went and drafted McCoy. And then what are you doing? You're drafting another quarterback the next year and moving him in there? Well, you just rendered that previous draft moot. I mean, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen done. Or one of the dumbest. Not the dumbest, but certainly one. It ranks up there. So, no wonder they call it the mistake by the lake. They can't get out of their own way.
It was almost as bad as that whole Kaepernick Alex Smith situation that San Fran had over there.
Yeah, well, that was also pretty nasty deal. But hey, you know what, people, that just shows you, Anthony. That just shows you how desperate teams are to win, and so they're going to start grasping at straws. And that makes you. It should make you, as a Patriots fan, appreciate. Not only, you know, the willingness to stick with a game plan for a while and certainly drive you nuts when they stick with a player 2 or 3 years like Rozai Dowling and like some people are now starting to claim about a guy like Dante Hightower. But you understand now why they do that, because you got to give them 2 or 3 years to see what you really have before you pull the plug, which is why I'm saying I'm not sure that I'm quite ready to go on Hightower yet, even though Eric's ready to go and a couple of callers have been ready to go and I can get it. I totally understand it. I just think, you know, I'm going to take Belichick's side of the ball here, and I'm going to say, look, let's see if this guy can, you know, figure out a way to make it happen, because we did that with a guy like Mayo and it kind of turned around a bit for him, so why can't it happen for somebody else? And too many teams are not willing to let that happen. That's one of the reasons why the Patriots have had the success that they have had. They don't hit on everyone, but they hit on more than their fair share. And management's willingness to let them do that is a huge reason why the Patriots are still relevant today with 13 consecutive winning seasons.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you got to build a foundation and definitely see a player's worth before you call the shot to get rid of them, for sure.
Yeah, and that's part of Cleveland's problem. They're calling shots left and right. They don't even know where the shots are coming from.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Hightower thing as well. I give him a little bit more time to develop and, you know, see where he goes. I don't think we should get rid of him just yet. I mean, you know, you invest a lot in a first overall draft pick, so.
No question. And he was such a devastating player in college, you know. I just had a huge appreciation, you know, for, you know, his ability to stick and to penetrate. And I just think they've got to try to find to make sure that there's a better role for him somewhere in the scheme. And, you know, maybe they'll have a meeting of the minds somehow and say, look, dude, this is what you got to do to stick on this roster. We need you to do this. And then if they can't, then maybe they try to move him, you know, and okay, that's fine, because I think the guy's got ability. I think maybe he's come a little bit short of our expectations of that ability.
Yeah, I agree. And, Yeah, with that being said, I'm hoping to see a little bit more of Dane Fletcher here in the next couple of games as well.
Well, his name has come up in discussion quite a bit, and I think it's because people look at Fletcher as a playmaker. You know, maybe a little bit more foot speed, maybe a little bit more cover ability. I can't argue against that. But, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Hightower's out there, you know, on every down, and Dane Fletcher is not. Fletcher, first of all, he's not as big. Second of all, they didn't expend as much money on him as they did on a guy like Hightower. So they're going to give Hightower every benefit of the doubt they can. I'm not saying that to denigrate Fletcher. I think he's a great player, but Fletcher is
undrafted. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's succeeding because he's a role player and he's succeeding in his role. It's kind of like Arrington earlier this year succeeded in his role as a nickelback. Man, when you put him out there every down, what the hell happened?
Yeah, he gets burnt.
Yes, and so I'm just saying we don't know that Fletcher wouldn't be in that same situation. And right now they haven't decided to make that switch, but I guarantee you if they did, I don't think you're going to like what you see.
Yeah, I agree. I hear you 100% on that one.
Just a thought.
Yeah, you don't want to give more than he can handle.
No! Now you hit the nail on the head right there. You don't want to give somebody more than they can handle. Maybe they've done that a little bit with Hightower. Maybe they've also needed him to handle a little bit more because of Mayo's absence and certainly because of Wilfork's absence in front of him. Because, you know, Wilfork, I think you're learning now how valuable a guy he really is. I think Vince Wilfork, outside of Tom Brady, is, there's no doubt in my mind, he is the most valuable player on the Patriots team.
Yeah, you couldn't stress that one enough. I mean, you know, these young guys have been doing as much as they can, but it just... It shows, you know, tremendously, you know, each game.
Well, they're not Vince. That's the that's their biggest problem. They're not Vince, but they're really good young tackles. And the Patriots, you know, they hit home runs with both of them. I mean, my goodness, they're both undrafted free agents, and they found guys that can play. Remember last couple of years when we had guys like Dedrick and Myron Pryor who's the other one? Love in the rotation at tackle. Everybody says, wow, the Patriots have all of this depth at defensive tackle. And all of a sudden, boom, those guys are gone. What happened? Well, as it turned out, those guys didn't have any shelf life because of some of the injuries and because they got worn down a bit. But now they've been able to find guys now that can fill that same type of role, and they're young, and there's no reason why they can't spend 2 or 3 years here and continue to grow with the position.
Yeah, you know, Kyle Love, in my opinion, I thought the guy was halfway decent. I mean, I personally thought we should have gave him at least a little bit more time, kind of like a Dante Hightower situation, but, I mean, I'm not the one, you know, calling the shots. So.
Yeah, I thought that was more of an injury problem more than anything else. I just didn't think that they thought he would be healthy enough to their liking to where he could be effective as a player. That's kind of like the whole Ron Brace thing, too. They stayed with Ron Brace for a long time, probably way longer than they should have. But because he was a second-round pick, you're going to stick with him. So I think those that are, you know, thinking, oh, well, let's get rid of Hightower, I think you're whistling Dixie because he's a first-rounder, baby. I think they're going to give him all the rope he needs to hang himself.
I agree with you on that one. You know, Chandler Jones having a pretty good season. I mean, personally, I think I would still like to see him get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback.
Well, you know, they're trying to move him into position still. And you notice that I think he, you know, it seems like it's almost once a series where they're moving him into tackle, where they're trying to give him, you know, the ability to collapse the pocket, depending upon what they feel like a play call might be. So I think you're going to continue to see them move him around a little bit. I also think teams are going to block and game plan against him because he's had that effectiveness as a pass rusher. So, you know, I mean, the guy wasn't the, you know, defensive player of the month for November for nothing. You know, he had a dynamite month. So in that regard, I think the Patriots are going to have to move him around now. So it's going to cause teams to look for him out on the field.
Yeah, definitely. One last question. Do you think we're going to see a little bit more of Josh Boyce in the next couple games?
I hope so. I mean, I was one of those, if you've been listening at all season, I've been one of those been clamoring for him to be back there since before he got back there. Now that they brought him back there and we can see a few positive returns out of it, I see no reason why he shouldn't be given that role. And I know why, largely because he didn't really have a further role other than returning kicks. And with so many kicks going through the end zone, why waste a roster spot if you're not gonna, if the guy isn't gonna be used, right? But yeah, I think absolutely. As the season wears on, fewer and fewer kicks, I think as you notice, as the air gets colder, are going through the back of the end zone in some of these cold weather places. And therefore, there's more of an opportunity to return kicks. So that's one thing, number one. And number two, I think he's also getting a role on special teams other than just kick returning. So he's not just taking up a roster spot and then basically going unused. You know, when you can only activate, you know, what is it, 47 players any given Sunday, you want to make sure that everybody can do something other than what their primary role is, with the exception of Tom Brady.
Yeah, yeah. I really, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more out of Amendola as well. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, I'll be honest, they haven't, I think that we haven't seen it because Julian Edelman has had the year that he's had. Edelman has had a Welker-like year. He's been quiet about it, but he's come through in the slot, and he's given the Patriots everything and more that they could have reasonably expected out of the slot because of the years really learning under a guy like Welker. And now that Amendola's back healthier, he really he's not nudging Edelman out of the way, and I think that's to Julian Edelman's credit. And here's a guy that's going to be a free agent again himself this next year, and what are the Patriots going to do about it?
Yeah, hopefully we sign him for a couple more years. I'd like to see that.
I would hope that would be entering in their thought process, because I think we know that Amendola's fragile. It's just who he is. And you if you're really going to dedicate yourself to having a slot receiver, you know, you can probably sign Edelman for way less money than you could have signed for Welker for last year. So I think you probably have to make that commitment.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
All right, pal.
I got to get running. I appreciate the time on the air. So.
Thanks, Anthony.
I'll call again soon.
You got it. Thanks. Appreciate that. Andrew in Buffalo, you're up next in the playbook. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm good, bud.
Yeah, I missed having you last week on the show. I know you was on vacation.
Well, it wasn't exactly a vacation. It was more work, but I will say that it was a working vacation because of where I was. So, but thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the fact that, you know, Bill likes to have a lot of depth when it comes to draft picks.
Yeah.
I feel like that is going a little bit out the window. We're not showing any depth right now with, you know, on defense, and it's just a really bad year. I just feel like his philosophy is going out the window. I don't know what's going on. Like, that we're just, we don't have a lot of depth at corner, linebacker, defensive line don't have a lot of depth. I don't know what's going on. I don't even know what we should select in our first round. I mean, if we had to pick a guy, who do you think we should get? Like, for what position?
You're already looking ahead to April?
Yeah. Like, that's been rolling in my mind all week.
Well, I think it's a little early to be doing that, to be honest with you, Andrew, because we've still got, you know, at least 4 weeks. We got 4 games left in the regular season. And I don't mean to, I'm not putting you down here, and I'm not really avoiding the question, but honestly, I haven't given it much thought. I would tell you that there has to be some fundamental decisions made, certainly in terms of where the injuries are and who's going to be ready to play when it comes time for, you know, OTAs next spring, and more importantly, in time for camp next summer. And if it looks like all is status quo, then I think that certainly would affect your draft decision. So, honestly, beyond that, I really don't know that I could give you a thorough rundown of who I'd like to see. I mean, I think they have to target defensive back again. I think that they need to potentially target tackle. I think they need to potentially target running back if they decide to do something with Ridley. I mean, you could almost pick, once again, as you can almost every year, you could almost just pick a position and you could say, well, the Patriots could use some help there. And that's not incorrect, because the title teams, the title contending teams, the championship caliber teams, they have depth to get themselves through the injuries. Look at all of the teams that are good right now. All the teams that look like they're going to be there, you know, in the playoffs. They have more depth than the teams surrounding them. That's why they are where they are. And so if the Patriots are going to stay in that position, they've got to concern themselves with depth overall, first and foremost.
Right. And one more question. I was wondering, you know, they say the Achilles injury is a really tough injury to overcome. I'm just thinking, will Wolford ever be the same? I'm just worried really about that. You know, because he's getting older and stuff.
Well, you know, that's fair. You know, hard to say. I've known a few people that have had Achilles injuries. They weren't NFL athletes. And they would tell me that, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, it took them a while to heal, but when they did heal, they felt like they were normal. So, you know, but they don't run and jump and cut and do things like NFL athletes do. I can only tell you that, you know, Vince, he's got to know that big body his better than anybody. And you notice that he had that surgery as quickly as possible after the Achilles injury happened. So I think he knew exactly what it was. The doctors knew what it was. This is what we have to do to fix it. This will get you back on your feet soon. And I think that they took those measures without any hemming and hawing and, oh, do we need to do this or do we need to do that, you know, when it came to something like fixing Gronk's arm last year. So I'm glad to see that, and I thought that the swiftness with which they answered his injury probably is a good sign on his ability to come back. But, you know, ultimately we're only going to know Andrew when he steps out on the field for the first time and tells us, hey, feels good.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, thank you for having me on the show, John.
Thanks, Andrew, for taking the time to call. It's always appreciated. All right, let me squeeze another timeout in here real quick, and then I've got some emails that I want to get to. Talking some old-school football, the question of the day had to do with pre-1970, pre-AFL-NFL merger. When we're thinking old-school football, the Cleveland Browns come to mind just because of their history, not only NFL, but the old, you know, All-America Football Conference. You know, the whole Paul Brown thing, the last time really that the Cleveland Browns were relevant, it seems like, you know, for a long extended time within the confines of pro football. And some of the great players that they've had, the first couple of guys that popped into my mind were Cleveland Brown players. Jim Brown, one. Leroy Kelly, number two. Frank Ryan, the quarterback, number three, came into my mind. Who would you have liked to have seen play that you never got a chance to see play in an old school sense, pre-1970? I know there's some names out there, even if you're not an old school guy or gal, there's some names that you've heard about, you've always wondered about. Love to hear what you have to say. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500. Hit me up on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster. Back in just a sec.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that Do Not Disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit GotToGetFios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by Metabank, member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
In the playbook for a Wednesday, about 10 minutes left of the program. If you want to join us, jump on in. 855-PATS-500. How about the name Bronco Nagurski? Now, I know that he didn't play for the Cleveland Browns, but still, with a name like Bronco Nagurski, wouldn't you have wanted to see a guy like that play? My goodness gracious. The name just epitomizes old school football, does it not? Hey, I don't know if you realize this or not, and maybe it's just an afterthought on your mind, but Patriots are one of four teams in the AFC this weekend that can actually clinch a playoff spot if things break down right. Pats, Broncos, Chiefs, Colts can all clinch playoff spots in the AFC this week if things break down right. So just thought you might want to know that. It's looking more and more, though, like, you know, it's really going to be a fight for one spot. Baltimore right now holding on to the sixth and final seed at 6-6. Miami is 6-6, but due to the tiebreaker, as of right now, they're on the outside looking in. And then, of course, you've got, what, 3-4 teams that are at 5-7, a game behind. Tennessee, Pittsburgh, San Diego, and, yes, the Jets. So this is going to basically boil down. This may be a war of attrition between Baltimore and Miami to see who gets that final playoff spot. And oh, by the way, the Patriots have both of those teams on their schedule over the next 4 weeks. So to think that maybe, you know, the last month of the season is going to be a cakewalk, like I had somebody tell me yesterday, in fact, last night. No, not really, because you're going to have both Miami next week and Baltimore the week after that with something serious to play for. And that's, for Baltimore at least, that's a chance to get back in the tournament to defend their title. So if the Patriots are looking ahead past Cleveland this week, that'll be the biggest mistake those guys can make. Huge mistake. You got to hope that that does not happen. Email from Bob in Watertown who says, I lived in Cleveland during my college years and was actually still a Pats fan, even though the Browns were in the playoffs multiple times and the Pats were maybe getting a couple wins a year. I always thought that Plain Dealer was a weird name for a newspaper. We were talking about that in the opening hour today. I don't know the history, but my best guess is that back in the old days, they may have been trying to convince readers that they didn't have a particular journalistic slant, that they just would deal the news to you plainly. Probably. That's actually a pretty good explanation. He says, one other interesting note, Cleveland used to be spelled with an A in it, as it was named after its founder, Moses Cleveland, C-L-E-A-V-E-L-A-N-D. However, the spelling was changed in the 1830s, pre-Plain Dealer, pre-newspaper, when the Cleveland Advertiser newspaper dropped the A in order to better fit the name of the city on the masthead. No fooling. City was called Cleveland with no A forever after. Now, that's good stuff, Bob. I mean, that's just stuff that you can only get here in the playbook. That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's good stuff. Excellent job out of you. This one comes from our friend Fat Beaver, who says, the player that I would have enjoyed watching in today's NFL, Forrest Gregg. One of the finest offensive linemen in the game, and just because of how light he would be compared to today's linemen, for example, like Sebastian Vollmer. That's a great one, Forrest Gregg. You know, Green Bay Packers, yes, but you're right. And I think almost any lineman that was worth his salt, and a guy like Chuck Bednarik comes to mind, because he was sort of a hybrid guy, played both ways, one of the last guys to truly play both ways in the game. But you would like to have seen how a guy might have fared today with the players so much bigger, stronger, faster. Now, I would argue that those throwbacks, like Forrest Gregg and like Chuck Bednarik, would, if you give them the same capabilities as today's players have, that they would have been every bit equal to the challenge and able to play with today's players. Now, if you're going to take, you know, the 1960s Forrest Gregg or the 1950s Chuck Bednarik and play them against, say, oh, I don't know, the 2010s, you know, linemen that are out there, pick one. Well, that's just a mismatch because the guy's going to be bigger, stronger, faster. There's no way to really quantify it. This is all part of the discussion when I hear people say, oh, you know, old school guys, they wouldn't have stood a chance today. Well, that's not true because, you know, everything is relative. The game moved fast for everybody then, but they also didn't train and develop like everybody does now. And so in that regard, if you're telling me the only way that you can really quantify former players with today's players is you got to give former players the chance to train at the same level as today's players do. Or reverse it. Take today's players, place them back in the 1950s or 60s without the benefit of knowing what they know now. Just plop. You know, you were born, you know, 50 years earlier. Without knowing what they know about health, nutrition, weight training, all that stuff, okay? If they have natural ability, it's going to come out. I agree. So doesn't it stand to reason that if a player had natural ability back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that it would stand out today as long as they had the same tools with which to work? Of course it would. It works both ways. It works both ways. Forrest Gregg, that's a good name, Fat. He says, well, unfortunately, the one who really damaged the Browns is Romeo Crennel, one of the worst head coaches of the 21st century. I'm sorry, but it's true. He drafted Braylon Edwards number one overall. He drafted Brady Quinn. He accumulated losing seasons. He really plunged the team underground. Yeah. Who is the Browns' starting running back, by the way? And Eric, 9-7? Yeah, I didn't get a chance to throw that one out to him there. But who is the Browns' starting running back? Isn't it, what's his name? Willis McGahee? Ooh, yikes. Bronco Nagurski, who last played in 1943, was a huge running back for that era. 6'2", 226 pounds. Ring size of 19 and a half. Those are big hands. Those are big hands. 19 and a half was his ring size? I'm assuming whoever sent me the email did the research on that, but that's amazing. And you're right. Bronco Nagurski ran over people in that era because he was huge. I mean, he was bigger than some of the linemen that he played with back then, 6'2", 226. Now, if you're 6'2", and 226, that's probably normal, average for a running back. And I might even be, in some instances, on the smallish side. But again, it's the way that the era, it's the way that, you know, everything has developed over the time. He had ability, and he had ability on top of extraordinary size for that time frame that made him stand out the way he did against his competition. Now, if you take a 6'2", 226-pound Bronco Nagurski with big hands like that, big old meat hooks that holds onto the ball, you know, Stephen Ridley would like to have Bronco Nagurski's hands, then I'm telling you, he could be successful in this day and age. I'm convinced of it. Give those guys the training that guys have now, old school players could be every bit as good. You probably wouldn't find as many of them. I will certainly give you that. But a lot of that is, again, because of the evolution of the sport. The NFL was still basically in its infancy back then. And only, what, 20, 30 years old by that time, around that time? So still relatively in its infancy. Not as many. Guys didn't make the kind of money that they make now. So it took a really special athlete / human being to want to play and subject himself to that kind of punishment because of just the sheer brutality of the game back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I think you'd have had a lot more players wanting to play if the sport was as glamorous then as it is now. And therefore, the entire sport would have, you know, risen to a different level. Luke says, John, my pick would be Lou Groza. Yep, Lou the Toe, we mentioned him earlier. An excellent kicker, plus he wore number 76 back then, which made him look real cool. I agree with that. Kicker wearing number 76. Well, he was also a lineman, that's why. Who's to blame for the Browns' failure since 1999? I put most of the blame on Savage, who just had no idea how to manage a cap and salaries and ended up almost costing his own franchise. Butch Davis also, and I have to include Crennel. He was clearly inexperienced. Terrible drafts, bad game plans, bad philosophies, bad game management. You know, some people are just cut out to be coordinators and, you know, assistants. Not everybody can be the chief. You know, as much as we all love and appreciate what Romeo Crennel did over the years, you know, for the Patriots franchise, it's hard to disagree with the proof in the pudding. He had a tough time in Cleveland, not dissimilar to the tough time that Bill Belichick had in Cleveland. Just that he hasn't been able to find the right spot and be in the right place at the right time, perhaps to continue his process in developing as a coach. The man can still coach. He might not just be in position to be a leader or a chief, if you will. Maybe he's best as a lieutenant.
Speaking of the Browns sucking,
yeah,
I got a treat for you.
Oh?
Just before we end the show here. It's about 2 minutes long.
Shoot.
It was sent to me by our friends at Football Nation, Todd and Bill, who come up after you on Tuesday and Thursday.
Yes.
They're looking at having this gentleman, hopefully, knock on wood, on their show tomorrow.
Okay.
But I think you'll appreciate this.
Go.
Time for the holidays, we present to you a very angry Browns fan Christmas. A superb record collection featuring Cleveland holiday classics. Just listen.
You know Campbell and Hoyer, Tim Couch, Kelly Holcomb, Filfer, Garcia, McCown, and Ty Detmer. But do you recall the oldest rookie of all? Whedon, the red-haired QB, cost a very high draft pick. And if you ever saw him, you would say he plays like
best catch the ball, don't drop the ball, most seem to say cut him today.
Trade him, trade him, trade him, trade him.
Last season, I Little. Release Greg Little. His hands are broke. He can't catch the ball. Way up in your lows, Jimmy H. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
From way up in the sky, Jimmy H. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
A team without a QB and a back who looks 63.
He's really old.
And a back who looks 63. Oh, the players out there are frightful, but that snuckin' liquor's delightful. And since Whedon can't throw, let him go, let him go, let him go. It's beginning to look a lot like Cleveland. Every play that snapped, take a look at the third and ten, fumbling once again. A punt that's blocked an interception too.
Use the hashtag.
So you get the idea. This guy does Christmas carols to like the Browns. And I guess you can submit your own ideas for lyrics and he'll sing them for you.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Make sure you thank the boys for sharing that with us today.
That's a classic. Awesome.
That is an absolute classic.
My favorite is the back that looks 63, because Willis McGahee looks like he can't beat you or I in a foot race. Right
Listen, I know. That's why I went sheesh earlier. I'm like, really? Willis McGahee? Oh, my goodness. Marvin says, John, there was nothing like looking down the barrel of the Green Bay Packers power sweep with a great Jim Taylor running behind Jerry Kramer and Forrest Gregg. If you were a DB, you know you were dead meat. The other would be Candace Comet, Gale Sayers. Nobody. And I mean nobody had moves like Sayers, not even Barry Sanders. I would agree with that. I saw Sayers play. I was young. I remember it. It was memorable. The last one for me would be Bambi Lance Allworth. He was so smooth, it was unbelievable. Great job as always, John. One last thought. Paul Warfield was a Brown long before he was a Dolphin. This is from Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. That's good stuff, Marvin. I love the choice of, obviously, Gale Sayers. I hadn't mentioned him, should have. And then, of course, you also seconding Forrest Gregg with Jim Taylor. And then Paul Warfield. Now, there's a list of Cleveland Brown players that I'm sure you probably aren't aware of. But several of these guys are actually in their, quote-unquote, ring of honor that they have circling the stadium in Cleveland. We've talked about Jim Brown and Paul Brown. Otto Graham is a name that Eric and I were talking about briefly in the opening hour. Played quarterback in the late 40s to mid-1950s, led the Browns to a championship game in each of his 10 seasons. Talking about the old All-American Football Conference as well as the NFL. He led the league in passing yards all 4 years of the old AAFC. He led the NFL twice in his years there. Had almost 24,000 career yards. He was 57-13-1 as a starter. Kids, that's an 81% winning percentage. I would love to have seen Otto Graham play. And he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame in Canton back in 1965. That's how long ago this was. That's a guy that deserves to be seen. So, you know, do some research on Otto Graham, maybe YouTube him, see if someone's thrown up some old film. But that's a guy that, you know, an old Brown at least, in addition to Jim Brown and Lou Groza, two former Cleveland players who you'd like to have seen, Otto Graham has to be on that list. By the way, someone also just asked me, Leroy Kelly, who is he again? And Eric said that in the opening hour. Kelly played in the late 60s to very early 1970s, so right about the time that the leagues merged. He had almost 13,000, over 12,000 combined rushing and receiving yards. He did have three straight rushing seasons of a better than 1,000 yards in the late 60s. He was selected to six consecutive Pro Bowls. He also had, how about this, 27 career 100-yard performances. Says something about his ability, doesn't it? And he was also put in the Hall of Fame almost 20 years ago, 1994. That's a guy. And then, of course, our emailer Marvin just mentioned Paul Warfield, who, you know, obviously, before he was a Dolphin, yeah, he was a Cleveland Brown. No doubt about that. And then Pawan has the last one here. He says, regarding today's topic, I don't know any old players from Cleveland, as I only started to watch football in 07. I heard a lot about Terry Bradshaw. I would want to watch Terry Bradshaw to know how good he is or if he really was all that good. Another thing I wanted to tell you, you sounded completely different to what you sound now when you called into the show from St. Thomas 2 weeks back. Really? Do I sound different?
Well, everyone's different on the phone.
Just because it was a phone, right?
But you may be more relaxed now that you're back. I don't know. You sound normal to me.
Maybe it was because I was worried about getting my ass on the beach.
Maybe that's true.
You know, it's possible, right? At that time, I was stuck in an airport waiting for a puddle jumper to get to St. Thomas. I was in the San Juan, Puerto Rico airport.
Yeah, if I recall, you were having trouble finding a spot to call me from because it was so noisy down
there. It was noisy. And, well, I can understand. People are clamoring to get to the beach. Got to go to the beach. Dan sent me this on Twitter. Love to have seen Jim Thorpe, voted greatest athlete of the 20th century. I'm sure there's never been anyone like him since. Yeah, that's another one. And you're the first person to mention Jim Thorpe today, but I mean, you know, we're not going to get everyone we thought of, but that's another one that, yes, I would definitely have loved to have seen. All right, little overtime, but hey, that's the way it goes on a Wednesday since there's nothing coming after this program. Thanks to Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer for joining us and giving us some Browns knowledge, whatever there is of it, but she gave it to us in the opening hour of the program today. More of that tomorrow. We'll see if Cleveland's going to figure out who's going to play quarterback. Russell S. Baxter rejoins us in the playbook, pro football guru himself. E-Scout will be back. Want to have you because, yes, we bring back Prediction Thursday, which means we have more yearbooks, media guides to try to give away. So let's do it. Be thinking those final scores. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel manana, kids.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.